if the cleaning person is the best person to explain to the patient whatever test they need, say, then in PACE, that cleaning person is encouraged to do it. And that's the way we really should think about the team. Not you're stepping on my territory, but who has the most knowledge and who is the best to get that care to that patient.
Hey out there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. We're going to be talking about the interdisciplinary team at a nursing home, the federally regulatorily required. We'll just say the federally required. Required by federal regulations, interdisciplinary team that participates in care planning among other things. But we're not having that conversation alone. We have the fantastic Dr. Barbara Resnick on the show to walk us through that process. All right, but before we get into that, it is time for the nursing home regulation question of the week and another opportunity for you to win the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug. So, Gene, can you show everybody the coffee mug? It's a good-looking mug. That can be yours if you answer the nursing home regulation question of the week by going to our TikTok, which is at Justice for Residents. You're going to look for the question of the week video, and how you'll distinguish it from the others is that this one you're looking for the thumbnail picture of Sophia Petrullo from the Golden Girls. Click on Sophia, and then you're going to answer the question of the week and comment your favorite Golden Girl. My favorite Golden Girl clearly is Sophia. I mean, that was one of the best shows. Like, I remember being a little kid, like, obviously a lot of it went over my head, but like, it was the smartest. Like, I love the Golden Girls. I've seen every single episode. I've probably seen at least a few episodes of Golden Palace, which was the spinoff, the Golden Girls spinoff that didn't last too long because I think B. Arthur didn't want to do the show anymore. I think that's what it was. But anyway, I never got a chance to go to New York, and there's like a coffee shop or a restaurant that's Golden Girl themed. And I think that they have a lot of memorabilia from, I think it's Rue McClanahan, somehow was associated with it in some way. Anyway, I digress. Put your favorite Golden Girl. It could be Rose. I'm sure Rose is probably the most popular. But if you're diehard, if you really love that show, Sophia is your favorite character. Anyway, the winner will be chosen randomly and announced on Sunday at our website, shingfirm.com/podcast/giveaway. Prize chips at the end of the month. Good luck, everybody. All right. So I think that the difficulty level this week, I'm going to say, is medium. And I only say that it's medium and not difficult because I want to say that this has been a question on this podcast before, but I thought it was, for lack of a better word, apropos or relevant to today's topic, which has to do with the interdisciplinary teams. So if you get it right, you are allowed to splurge and binge on some Golden Girls. Under 42 CFR 483.212II, who is not required to be on the interdisciplinary team? Is it A, the attending physician, B, the director of nursing, or C, a CNA with responsibility for that resident? And that answer is B. While a registered nurse with responsibility for that resident is required to be on the interdisciplinary team, it doesn't necessarily have to be the director of nursing. And of course, the attending physician is required, as well as a nurse aide that has at least some responsibility for that resident. All right, enough of that. It's time to get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, or sticking with the Golden Girls concept, the cheesecake and coffee of the episode. We're not having the conversation about interdisciplinary teams alone. We have Dr. Barbara Resnick, PhD, CRNP. She is a professor and associate dean of research at the University of Maryland School of Nursing, where she holds the Zonia Zipporkin Gershwitz Chair in Gerontology. I should have probably reached out and figured out how to say that correctly. So I apologize about that. The Zonia Zipporkin Gershwitz Chair in Gerontology. With over 40 years of clinical experience and research experience, her work focuses on promoting function, physical activity, and resilience in older adults. She is widely published, actively involved in national aging organizations, and has received numerous prestigious awards for her contributions to geriatric care. And we are so happy to have her on the show. Dr. Reisnick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
So let's just start right into it. Let's put the rubber to the road. Can you kind of explain to me what the interdisciplinary care team is with respect to nursing home care?
So the beauty of nursing home care is interdisciplinary care is required. It isn't in other settings. So I think we need to celebrate that. The interdisciplinary team can really vary depending on possibly the size of the facility. It could be whether it's a chain or a freestanding facility, a long-term care or a nursing home within a continuing care retirement community. So it really varies, but the team usually includes nursing, ideally medicine. And when I say nursing, I mean the broad range of nursing. Could be assisted, depending again on what state, a direct care worker, nursing assistant, whatever is working in that state. LPNs, RNs, DON, some have charge nurses, education nurses, whatever level of nurse you have. Then I think rehab is critical as a member of the team. And again, that might be physical therapy, occupational therapy, maybe speech therapy, depending on, again, the setting and what they can do. Pharmacy is critical to the team. Again, they're not always there, but a member of, you have to think virtual team now. And it could be a pastoral person in some communities, and certainly social work. There could be also, should be, I wouldn't say could be, but should be also dietary, because that is a requirement. Those are really the sort of set core members, as well as nursing home administrator. You think of maybe not so much on the clinical side of things, but certainly on the administrative side.
So you've described the super team. You got Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, all these people, okay? And they meet, but what are they doing? What's the objective of the meeting?
The objective of the meeting is to keep the patient on this in the center of the table. And generally, these individuals meet around care planning, and it may not be the whole team, depending on the needs of the patient, but I think that's one common meeting point. Often, these teams meet at the beginning of the week, after the weekend, to touch bases. Some teams meet every morning. So, again, that depends on the facility and how closely the team wants to meet. And again, it's not going to be all those people. Maybe some these days, best thing from COVID is they can be brought in either via a Zoom meeting or a telephone even. And then often they'll meet at certain meetings like quality assurance and those types of things. So I think it really varies how often the team meets face to face, or how often, I'm going to say, subgroups within that bigger super team meet.
For any nerds that are keeping up with us at home, if you want to look at the regulation that clearly specifies the interdisciplinary team, that's 42 CFR 483.21, and then you're going to go down to B and then 2. And I only say that to as a preface for the next question, which is, why do you think the regulations require a team? Why can't it just be Superman or Wonder Woman alone? Like, why do we have so many people that need to participate, even if it's in a subgroup?
So, well, there's two reasons I'm going to say. The one is because if it's not regulated, it would never happen. Same reason unfortunately, some of the medical regulations are there was because they were not happening. So I think that's why it's in the regs. Why do we have an interdisciplinary team? Because, like it or not, each one of those people brings a special expertise. They have gained that expertise, and they're the best person to address whatever that certain problem that meets their expertise. Therapies, social work, medicine, and nursing are examples. They each bring something. And I think the person that has the skills to meet that patient's needs should be the one to do it. Now, I will give you an example from PACE programs. In PACE programs, if the cleaning person is the best person to explain to the patient whatever test they need, say, then in PACE, that cleaning person is encouraged to do it. And that's the way we really should think about the team, not you're stepping on my territory. But who has the most knowledge and who is the best to get that care to that patient?
I mean, I guess that makes sense. And again, like, and I only say this because I have a toddler and he's into the super friends and the superheroes, is that you got Flash, he runs really fast. You got Superman, he's real strong. Batman's real smart. And, you know, Batman might be able to do things that Superman can do, but he can't do it as good as Superman, right? So I completely get that. So let's kind of transition into, we have the team. We understand why we need the team. If it's about, at least in part, planning, how often do you does it seem that the team should meet with respect to that plan? Is it shift by shift, day by day, quarterly?
So when you say plan, you don't mean the patient care plan. You mean how they're going to work together?
No, fair enough. That's probably a bad question. The comprehensive care plan for the resident.
I think that the team should ideally all be at that care plan meeting. How wonderful that would be for our residents. It doesn't always work that way. But I think we need to work better towards at least somewhat of a report from each one of those individuals. Again, it might depend. Some residents, for example, are not getting any therapy. Therapy doesn't need to be there, right? So it just depends on the needs of that resident. And then I think really just meeting based on regs for when the care plan needs to be done. Although I do think it's very important, particularly sometimes in difficult situations, for the team to meet ahead of time and be consistent and speak with a consistent voice, particularly when there's an issue. You don't want one team member to be responding in one way. Over, say, can I watch my favorite show at 3 a.m. and another team member saying something else?
Okay, so typically in your experience, is the outcome of that meeting the care plan itself, or does the interdisciplinary team typically generate other types of documents or no documents?
So I think that that meeting informs the care plan. That really the actual changes in the care plan, hopefully, or development of the care plan, really probably can't happen till you get the patient's voice in there as well. And forgive me, I didn't include the patient and or the family as part of the team. It's, let's say I assumed it. They're at the center of the team.
We'll give you that one. We'll give you that one. That's okay. And 'cause that was about to be my next question, is how important do you think it is that the resident's family member be there for that?
Again, that depends on the resident. If you have a resident that's living with some dementia, has some impairment, maybe even just has really bad hearing, then I think somebody should be there to be their voice.
Do you ever see, and I think you kind of hinted at this a little bit, in your experience, is there ever any rivalry? Like, in other words, like perhaps the dietitian thinks that the intervention should be more dietary versus you have perhaps the DON that might think it's, you know, like, no, these other interventions and things like that. And you kind of have like a, I don't know, what was that book? Team of Rivals, like, what was it? Doris Keynes about the Abraham Lincoln's cabinet. You got people fighting over, you know, how we're going to take care of this person. Does that ever happen?
I think it happens all too often. And that's what I mean, where it's critically important for the team to be consistent. Because, I mean, you've got a toddler, and toddlers and children know how to play one parent against another.
True,
Well,
true.
it's not good if the DON says something, the charge nurse says something else, the medical director comes in and says something else. Particularly when you know there's issues that are going to be raised at that care plan meeting, a pre-meeting is needed, I think.
I see. Yeah, because that again, that's at least for this podcast, that's definitely something that kind of is a lesson in every episode, is that family involvement can be critical depending on the type of resident that you're dealing with. Because I mean, like, if the resident is nonverbal, it's important for somebody to be there to say, you know, like at nighttime she gets upset, or you know, she's her whole life she was a teacher, so sometimes she's talking and that's what she's doing. She's conducting a class in her head, right? Things like that. So that you might not get just if the attending physician is there, because the attending physician hasn't known the resident her whole life, right?
I think, truthfully, the inclusion of the resident in the family is critical. And I do hear teams sometimes will exclude the resident because of dementia, because of behavioral issues, or whatever. The other thing that we didn't raise, we talked about having a resident there and a caregiver. Sometimes what happens is, though, we have multiple family members and they're the ones that are disagreeing. And that's a whole nother issue. And again, it's helpful if those things can be identified ahead of time, and depending on who is the best to address those get addressed outside the care plan meeting. A number one, it means the care plan meeting can go on forever and can be very, very uncomfortable for the resident, for other staff, and it gets really ugly sometimes. So that would be the only thing that I would say is, you know, we can't really limit the three daughters that want to come in, but thinking that through, particularly if you know that there's often strong differences. And my experience is often the social worker within the community is the best at a number one, being aware of that issue and also addressing it ahead of time, you know, letting the family know we're not going there at this meeting. I'll speak with you after, or I'll set up a time for you to redo the advanced care planning or whatever the issue is.
Yeah, I feel like on the spectrum of family participation, on one end that you don't want is no one's there. And then I guess the next level up is you have the children fighting about how to do things. And I guess that's the next worst thing. But Barbara, we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us today.
You are welcome.
So any astute viewer who has stayed and watched this far into the program will notice that at the beginning of the episode, I was not wearing a tie, and then during the interview, I was wearing a tie, and now I'm not wearing a tie again. And that's because the introductions and the outros of the episodes are recorded after I record the interview, and I forgot to do that, so I had taken my tie off. And it's so hot in my studio that I didn't want to put my tie back on it again. So that's a little piece of little behind the scenes magic for you. If you have an idea for someone that you would like for me to talk to, let me know. If you have an idea for a topic you would like for me to talk about, let me know that as well. Be sure to participate in the coffee mug giveaway. Tell us who your favorite Golden Girl is. New episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast come out every single week on Monday. And with that, folks, we will see you next time. Thank you for being a friend. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.